Thank you. And like they said,
enjoy this moment, and have fun with it. Aha, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah!
I'm rolling whenever you're ready to go.
Ding, ding!
How about we can just watch basketball?
How about we can just watch basketball?
Happy Monday morning, folks, and welcome to the Daily Ding. I'm hosting Mo DeKeel. They gave me the keys, so this is going to go several ways, none of them correctly. And to make sure it continues to go the wrong path, we brought Keith Parrish with me to co-host and make sure I don't screw it up. Let's see what happens.
Let's Keith. Run this train off the tracks. That's what we're going for. Let's have a big windup and swing and try not to connect with the nose of anyone else.
Okay, well, I will be swinging violently through the podcast. That was good foreshadowing from Keith. But before we get to that game, I want to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks coming back from down 0-2 and pretty much everybody leaving them for dead. Budenholzer was looking for a new job at that point, new houses. They've come back. They've tied the series 2-2. I mean, just off the bat, Keith, what was your expectations? What'd you see? What'd you like? What's going on here?
Well, I thought initially in the first half, it was just an incredible basketball game. I mean, both teams were very physical, but also both teams were making all their shots, which was a marked departure from the previous matchup where no one could make any shots. We're like, that second half in game three was so, I mean, I thought it was sublime. I know, like, I like the Grizzlies, used to be with the Clippers. We enjoy some of those second halves where no one makes any shots. But this one, the first half, you know, everyone was knocking down their buckets, and then the Kyrie injury. And then that kind of, I feel like, becomes the game.
Yeah, that deflated everything. Kyrie only got 17 minutes in the second quarter. He goes up for offensive rebound, lands on Giannis Antetokounmpo's foot, badly sprains his ankle, ends up having to leave the arena on crutches and in a walking boot, according to a tweet from Adrian Wojnarowski. I mean, that was a big loss. And then from there, it just kind of became a situation for the Nets where offensively, it was all on KD. And we can argue whether PJ Tucker fouls a lot or not. But I thought he did a great job defensively on KD in general and really kind of got into him.
I can't get over the people who are like, oh, wow, the NBA officials are really favoring PJ Tucker over Kevin Durant. Like, PJ Tucker's not getting a soft whistle. Like, that was a good playoff game. Both teams, I loved it. Both teams were shoving each other. And like Blake Griffin, I mean, Blake Griffin's doing cheap shot left and right. For me, it was, you know, just a wonderfully entertaining, hard played, well played basketball game. And it's overshadowed by the injury. But like, no, PJ Tucker. I mean, what? When PJ Tucker scores 13 points, his team might win. Like that, yeah. You know, like if he's knocking down the corner threes, his team's probably going to win if he's surrounded by a bunch of other good players.
Right. And the problem, again, for the Nets, just not enough guys besides Kevin Durant at this point, with James Harden sidelined and Kyrie out. And Steve Nash has come out and said, like, hey, I'm not going to rush James Harden because we're down Kyrie Irving. So we'll see what happens in game four. But you touched on it, and it's something that's really important. PJ Tucker hit some corner threes. The Bucks as a whole went 16 of 47 from three. Not even like a great shooting percentage. 36% is nice, but not like fantastic. But I thought their offense as a whole had such a better feel than it did in all of game three.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the ball was zipping around and they were really getting some great looks. I think in the first half, they were a little better, 11 for 27 from three. So like that once, I felt like once Kyrie went down, the game, like the tenor of the game changed a little bit and no one was, again, very sharp in the second half. But yeah, like it seemed like the Bucks were maybe learning some things on offense. I feel like most people thought coming into this series that, you know, the Bucks issue was going to be, can you stop the Nets? I think we all assumed the Bucks would be able to score on the Nets no problem, but that wasn't the case in the first couple games where it's like, uh-oh, the Bucks are in serious trouble. But now, if it was just returning home to Milwaukee to get those home games under their belts, and now with the just cumulative injuries of Harden and Irving, this thing is a toss-up, and I guess you probably I mean, I guess you'd favor the Bucks now, because just being like a Twitter doctor watching Kyrie go down, it's hard to imagine that he's going to be ready for games 5 and 6.
Well, I am very curious where you got your Twitter doctor degree from. But overall, I think the thing you touched on the most is, you know, they kind of went away from themselves the first 2.5 games offensively. Like it looked so different than what they were. It was a lot more one-on-one, a lot more isolation stuff. Our colleague Seth Partnow has written many things on this amazing website called theathletic.com about that. The offense kind of come into a crawl. This game, more than any other, I felt like they got back to who they were offensively. A lot more Giannis setting screens and rolling, getting him in the dunker spot. He still took some shots that I really have problems with, the dribble pull-up threes and things like that. And I'm getting to Russell Westbrook territory with his three-point shot where I don't want him to do this anymore. But overall, they looked a lot smoother. Everything was kind of going. They got big minutes from Pat Connaughton doing all the hustle plays that they missed from Dante DiVincenzo. I thought this was just really a very strong confidence-building game for the Bucks.
Yeah, I don't know how, if you're a Milwaukee fan, you're not feeling really good about your chances in this series, because you saw it again before the Kyrie injury that this team was playing so much better. And you're seeing, I come back to the ball movement. It felt like the first couple of games, I was just quizzically watching the Bucks, being like, why is everyone standing still? Yeah. Why is it always just Giannis one-on-one? Or why is it always Middleton one-on-one? And you saw that. And now, I mean, the Nets, like, what do you do? Like, do you gear up? You say, okay, Mike James, you got it, buddy. Like who's going to step up now for the Nets? Like, who does Nash turn to if Kyrie is unable to go?
Well, I think it's just going to be, they're going to have to run a lot of movement stuff and things like that to get shots for Joe Harris on the move and opportunities from that and cutting and things like that. Do want to touch on this before we move on. Middleton with 8 assists. Like, he was great as a playmaker tonight, I thought. And that's kind of where the Bucks go. So Bucks 107, Brooklyn 96, series is tied. It's going to be a 3-game series from here on out. We did not think this a week ago. Now let's move on to the Denver Nuggets versus the Phoenix Suns. Suns sweep the Nuggets, but we just got to start with the biggest story of all. Nikola Jokic gets a flagrant 2. One of his frustration fouls swipes at Cameron Payne, hits Cameron Payne in the face. I think that was pretty clear, and gets the ball. And then the referees toss him, give him a flagrant 2. Keith, was that the right call?
It was the right call, and I'm a huge biased Nuggets fan. Like, I love watching the Nuggets. I love Nikola Jokic. When that play happened, I'm like, oh, wow. That's about a textbook of flagrant 2 as you can have. I really hope they don't throw out the MVP. That would make me sad. But I had no expectation that the referees would ignore the rule. We get into this thing where we're like, you shouldn't throw the MVP out. And like, all the other NBA players watching at home on Twitter are like, how can you throw out Jokic for that? Like, he's going for the ball. But it was one of those things where we want the officials to ignore the rule there. And I feel like we wish they had some leeway to be like, hey, this is a big moment. This is an important player. This is not, I don't know, Campazzo or something. This is the MVP. Why don't we just let him in? Like, are they on the line with Sekakis being like, hey guys, can we just leave him in? Like, it's weird to toss him out of this game. And so, like, what a just disheartening end to the year for this Nuggets team, where, and their fans, I mean, like, you're feeling so good about this whole season. You knew it was going to be tough against the Suns with no Jamal Murray, but to have the year end with that, it's just like a weird taste in your mouth. And like, what did you think? Do you agree that like that's the correct call, so they have to make it, and sorry Jokic, you get kicked out?
I actually do, and here's the thing. It's such a bad frustration, selfish foul. And yeah, like, when you see him wind up and people are like, he's going for the ball, he's actually not when he winds up. He's going to foul him. And he's just not, his intent isn't to hit him in the face. And he goes and apologizes on his way out of off the court. He goes to apologize to Cameron Payne. And I give Jokic a lot of credit for that. And I don't think any of it was malicious, but it's that frustration foul that we've seen a lot from him over the years. I thought he did a lot better this season. avoiding that, but I just felt like you got to toss him on that because let's just be honest, if it's the other way around, if it's Campazzo on CP, you know, people are going to be screaming for Campazzo to be suspended.
Yeah, it's really strange. I mean, it's a weird situation where when you understand like kind of how we got here as a league, where this is all these flagrant foul rules and basically every game you watch, the commentators are like, back in my day, that's just a playoff foul, but I expect that under review to be a flagrant one. We've grown accustomed to that. It's all basically stemming from the Malice in the Palace, where you don't want hard fouls to go uncalled because then like the tempers boil up, the you know the fouls get harder and harder, and then you have a fight breakout. So it's all basically stemming from, we don't want fouls. And so maybe they turned the dial too much, where you have like Porzingis last season getting ejected for two, we called them soft technical fouls, like an air punch. We're like, I've seen them ignore the air punch. Why are we calling the air punch? And so the refs sometimes argue letter of the law. That's always supposed to be a technical foul. But like this one, again, you see Jokic's wind up. And you see in his face, I would describe it as murder. Like his face is so violent going in. We're like, he's swinging for the ball, but he knows he's going to commit a foul. And so he then becomes that, then that becomes that unnecessary and excessive contact. And when you strike the guy like flat on the bridge of the nose, I was like, yeah, they're going to toss him. And I had my fingers crossed, like, please don't toss him. But like, I don't know. I get accused too many times of being the referee defender online and on Fast Break Breakfast, but like I have to defend the refs. Like I feel bad for them having to throw out Jokic. I feel like their hands were tied with the play.
They had to, but let's go on real quickly. Look, Chris Paul and Devin Booker were phenomenal in this game. CP with 37 points, Booker with 34. Chris Paul with his third quarter, really leading up to even Jokic doing the Cameron Payne foul was amazing. He was getting wherever he wanted to in the paint, getting every mid-range shot he wanted. He just showed. He said, look, guys, I'm Chris freaking Paul, and I belong here.
I mean, absolutely incredible and dominant performance from Chris Paul. You give credit to Chris Paul because he's had a long career. He's a highly decorated point guard, one of the greatest point guards of all time, and he knows how hard it is to get this far. Like he knows there's injuries here. Every team's learning. Like you can go up 2-0 in a series, then you have a twisted ankle, then you might not advance. And for him to advance to the conference finals for the second time in his career, and he knew the opportunity was there. And he said, he looked at like the Nuggets and is like, who's standing in the way of me getting where I want to be? Monte Morris and Facundo Campazzo? No, I'm going to have whatever I want at all times. And just a masterful game tonight. What did he finish with? 36?
37.
37 points from the 36-year-old Chris Paul. That's astounding.
37 and 7 assists. Devin Booker also was phenomenal in this game. 34 points, 11 rebounds. Like, I just thought overall they set the tone. The Nuggets made a run. You know, they had good games from Will Barton. Michael Porter Jr. started to wake up a little bit, got some stuff from Monty Morris, but it just wasn't enough. And then with the Jokic ejection, it was all over for them. That ends their season. They get swept. The Suns move on to the Western Conference Finals. They're going to have a lot of time off they're going to have a lot of time off as the Clippers and Jazz figure out who's going to play them. And I think that's going to be a good thing and a bad thing for them. I'd be worried about some rust accumulating.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because they started their playoffs against the defending champs, the Lakers. Maybe that, you know, they get a break with the AD injury, but I think they were still finding their footing. But I think most people assumed the Lakers were a tougher foe than the Nuggets without Jamal Murray. So like they take care of business in the first round, they advance against the Lakers. Then I don't want to call it a tune-up. I don't want to be disrespectful to the Nuggets and like the fight they put up, but the Suns, way more talented, way more firepower, and they're absolutely hitting their stride. I mean, they had an incredible regular season, but like that front court, I mean, Ayton, Bridges, and Crowder all playing together with this all-NBA backcourt of Booker and Paul, they look fierce. The Suns look like a title contender right now, and like whoever they end up playing in the conference finals, I think is going to be absolutely just tremendous. An exciting matchup.
It's going to be exciting, and I can't wait to pod with you again, Keith. If they ever let us get the trains back on the track, we will find out. Thank you, folks, for listening to us on the Athletic Podcast Network. Remember, we got a ton of amazing shows from House of Strauss, the NBA show with Murder, She Wrote, which I'm on Fridays. We got Hoops Adjacent with David Aldridge. We got Tampering with Sam Amick and his crew. Basket Buds with Zach Harper and that crew. So make sure you're checking all of that out, as well as all of our team-specific podcasts. And go check out all the amazing writing on TheAthletic.com. Keith, take us home.